This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand.
Blood on my shirt, two ribbons, might have killed me that time. Oh, if I'd left, he's slow and he's drunk, and he lost his grip on me.
That's Persephone by the Canadian musician Alison Russell. After nearly 20 years of touring and playing with the bands Poe Girl and Birds of Chicago, Russell became a breakout star in Americana music last year with her first solo album, Outside Child. The Americana Music Association named it Album of the Year. It's a story of survival and resilience and how she finally found joy after being severely abused when she was a child. And a warning for you, this conversation and her album covers that period of her life, so please choose now where and when to listen. Alison Russell is performing tomorrow night at the Troubadour in West Hollywood, and she joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Honored to have you. All right. So talk about this decision to make an album on your own after working in collaboration for a couple of decades.
You know, it wasn't so much a decision in some ways. I had applied for a grant to the Canada Council for the Arts. I'm a Canadian living in America, and it was actually a writing grant that I applied for. But I had been on the road most of 2019 with my band Birds of Chicago, and also with sort of a super group called Our Native Daughters, which is Rhiannon Giddens, Layla McCalla, Amethyst Kia, and me. Kashiba, Kashiba, you're free now, you're free now. How does your spirit fly? And we had written all of these songs, and I just kind of couldn't close the floodgates back up, and more songs were coming through, and I have quite a distinct memory of being on the Our Native Daughters tour bus in July of 2019, driving through the night to the Newport Folk Festival and writing what would become the first song of Outside Child on that overnight drive. And I found out right at that time that my writing grant had come through, and it was just exactly enough to book 4 days at my favorite studio in Nashville, which is called the Sound Emporium. And so we did it, and all of my kind of chosen community of musicians were there. And in fact, when we began those recordings, I was in so much denial about making a solo record that I was sort of calling them demos and saying, oh, maybe I'll use some of these for Our Native Daughters, or maybe I'll use some of them for Birds. And, you know, I was in quite a bit of denial about the fact that I was making a solo personal record and statement. But all of my musical community around me realized what was happening and kind of gently guided me into it. So it's really solo in name and sort of subject matter thematically only because it is so much about my community uplifting me in the work that I do and in my life.
Well, so what was that first song that came to you on that bus to Newport?
It was Fourth Day Prayer. And it was quite funny because the buses that we were on two buses. We had all six of our children with us. Between Rhiannon and Layla and I, there are six kids, all the guys in the band and a camera crew from the Smithsonian who were filming a documentary about Our Native Daughters on the other bus. And the most comical part was that the driver of the kids' bus was a misanthrope, I would say, but particularly disliked women and children. And so it was not a great fit for us with Anthony, the bus driver. And my daughter had an accident on that particular overnight drive, and he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop the bus. And so it was this comical moment of scrambling. I think I found a Black Myself merch shirt and kind of cleaned up the bunk as best I could and found a bikini stuffed into my purse from a river stop earlier that day. And that's how we rolled into Newport.
Wow.
It was pretty funny. And I found myself just laughing because I thought, well, if this is the worst thing in my life right now is this grouchy bus driver, I've really come a long way. And one of the lines from the song popped into my head, which was, these are the best years of your life. If I'd believed that, I'd have died. Something told me that they lied, so I survived. Oh, I survived. Left home, I was just a child. Slept in the graveyard under the mile. When the sun came up and found my skin, I rose again. It's one for the hay, the loops. As you made reference to earlier, I am a survivor of childhood sexual, psychological, physical abuse, very severe abuse for over a decade. My abuser was my adoptive father, who was a white supremacist American expat. And, you know, it was not a good scene. And for those of you just listening, I am a Black mixed heritage queer woman. And so it was not a good time in my life. And I think one of the cruelest things we could ever say, honestly, to any teen, whatever they're living through, is these are the best years of your life. Because even if it's just puberty you're going through, it's miserable. We all know it's miserable. Mm-hmm. These are not the best years of your life.
Absolutely.
It gets better. It really does. If it can get that much better for me, it can for you too.
Hmm. Well, so what was it then that, was it the bus driver? Was it that that triggered this outpouring? Was it that it was finally time for you to tell this story? What was it that you thought, okay, now is the time to really talk about what happened to me as a child?
Yeah, no, certainly it wasn't the bus driver. I mean, clearly it was, I mean, it's everything. It's your whole life preceding your first record, really, that triggers it, you know? Mm-hmm. It took me that long to process my childhood, my trauma. It took motherhood. It took finding a group of sisters. It took finding a musical community that uplifted me and accepted me as I was. And it took years of decolonizing my own mind, and I'll never be done with that process, frankly. But it got to the point, motherhood was the catalyst, I think, for me, of realizing that at some point I would need to use my words more bravely, because I'm always telling my child that, use your words. But what am I doing to use my words to reduce harm in the world? You know, I had to ask myself that question, and I had to ask myself, what kind of ancestor do I want to be? Well, I want to be a good future ancestor. And in order to do that, I believe that I need to try and do everything I can with what I have, what gifts I have, meager though they may be, to reduce harm in the world right now. That's what I'm given to do. I don't want my daughter to have to carry the same burdens. The album is not about abuse. Yeah. It's about the journey out of abuse. You know, the transformative power of art and love and community is really what the record is about.
You used this interesting phrase just now, decolonizing my mind. I just want you to talk a little bit about choosing to use that word decolonizing. What did you mean by that?
I mean it quite literally. I think that the forces, the toxic hierarchical forces of colonization that tell people of color we're lesser than, that tell anyone who's on the queer spectrum we're lesser than, who tell new immigrants they're lesser than, or women that they're lesser than and shouldn't be in charge of their own bodies, you know, those same forces are why my American expat father believed he could do what he did to me. You know, he was raised in a sundown town in Indiana. There are still sundown towns in our country. We're not past it. Yeah. You know, he was an abused child. He was abused not only physically by his family, but also ideologically. I believe that indoctrinating our children in hateful and violent ideologies is a form of child abuse. What happened to the Hitler Youth was child abuse. What happens to children growing up being brainwashed with white supremacist ideology, that's child abuse. And he was a child who grew up with those beliefs. And when he moved to Canada, he brought those beliefs with him. And those beliefs, by the way, are alive and well in Canada too. But he did not see me as human, because in fact, the constitution of this country told him and everybody else for many, many, many years that I was 3/5 of a human being, anyone who looked like me. And that doesn't just go away. It doesn't just disappear. And that's what I mean by decolonizing. I was raised in a white supremacist household to believe that I was worth less, literally worth less than other humans in the world. And I believed that story for years and years. You know, a lot of us carry internalized self-hatred that generally takes the form of self-harm. It certainly did in my case.
And your mom is, your mom is white. Correct?
She is. Mm-hmm.
So your biological father is from Grenada, and he was a student in Canada when he met your mom, but he left the country, I understand, before they both realized that she had become pregnant with you. And so you never knew your dad?
No, I didn't meet my Black family until I was 30 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I was raised in a racist town, because Montreal struggles with very severe racism. It's a beautiful place too, but it's also intensely segregated. It's more segregated than anywhere I've been in the South.
Oh, really?
In Montreal, we would get stared down and I would be questioned constantly. And essentially the question, because I was in a white biased, if not completely white supremacist environment at all times, the question was always essentially, why are you Black? Why are you here? You know, where are you from? And if I said I'm from Montreal, born and raised, they'd say, no, where are you really from? Which is not a question that was ever asked of my white brother, you know?
Yeah. And one of the lines in your song, Fourth Day Prayer, says, Father used me like a wife, mother turned the blindest eye. Stole my body, spirit, pride, he did each night. Where was your mother when all this was happening?
She was often altered on substances, and he encouraged that. She worked nights a lot. She literally turned a blind eye because that man was, unfortunately, in my bed almost every night, and she did nothing. But she's also, in this instance, a victim, because my mom is almost 30 years his junior. She was barely out of teenhood when she met him. She was in severe aftershocks, I believe, of both postpartum depression and in the early onset of very, very severe schizophrenia, which went undiagnosed for years. You know, in some ways, I view my mom more as an older sister in the situation that we were in, who never left, whose mind was so thoroughly colonized and brainwashed that she never left, and she has not left him to this day. And it breaks my heart. Absolutely breaks my heart. But, you know, it's also, there are the things that we can control and the things that we can't. And I can be there to support her if and when she ever chooses to leave, but I can't force her to leave, you know. And that breaks my heart, but that's the truth.
Yeah. Just listening to you, and we just met at the beginning of this interview, so I don't know you. You just sound so together, and I don't know how to really ask you this, but I'm just wondering, given the extent of your abuse, so serious as you've just described it, how is it that you're not a mess? I mean, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be able to handle that and maybe would turn to substances or other things and just be broken, but you don't sound broken at all.
I think the miracle of my survival is by the grace of my ancestors and the resilience of my ancestors, and we all carry that ancestral resilient strength. That's the other side of the coin of all the abuse and bigotry that, you know, every branch of the human family, the one human family, has been plagued by. The other side of that coin is resilience and strength. That's our birthright, I believe. And in my case, art, music, I was very lucky to be in Montreal. And I am someone who happens to process the world through music. And I found that early. And my mom, in fact, was the first one to open that door and to show me that gift. My mom is a beautiful piano player and singer. And I felt connected to her through music, even when she couldn't show me love in any other way. You know, I can remember very early memories of like hiding under the piano as she played, because I knew if she saw me, there would be, you know, there would be confrontation. It would be yelling and scary. But if I just hid and was very small and quiet, I could just bask in the music. Honestly, to me, I remember that feeling of the sound was also felt warm to me. It felt like love. It felt like her love made manifest in the only way that she could.
Oh, my Montreal, can I dream of you tonight?
And I've never stopped feeling that way about music. Music is transformative. And it really is through art and the community of people that I met through art. That is why I'm, you know, relatively okay. And I appreciate you for saying that. I think we're all messes in our various ways, you know.
But through no fault of our own, some people have had to suffer a lot more than others. And you, unfortunately, are one of them.
But Yola and I always talk about this. There's no trauma Olympics. Trauma is trauma. And none of us is getting out of this life without experiencing it or, by the way, alive. So, you know,
right.
So savor and hang on to these goodnesses and each other while we have each other, you know.
That's beautiful. Well, let me play a song that illustrates what you've just been talking about. And this is actually your newest song. It's a duet with the musician Brandi Carlile. It's called You're Not Alone. In the cradle of the circle, oh, in the cradle of the circle, all the ones who came before, all the ones who came before you. The strength is yours now. The strength is yours. You're not alone. Well, I want to thank you so much for speaking with us today. You really are an inspiration, and your music is just beautiful. Congratulations on the album, and congratulations on the tour. Allison Russell, who will be playing tomorrow at the Troubadour in West Hollywood. Go see her. Allison, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that'll do it for us today on Press Play. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram. We are at KCRW Press Play. And you can also download and subscribe to our podcast, of course, at KCRW or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Madeline Brand. Thanks for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow. De l'Europe aux Amériques.